This is Geek News Central. My name is Todd Cochran, and the stories that lead today's show are as follows. Did you know you can now watch Netflix offline? How about self-driving cars and the effects it's going to have on society? We're going to share with you what the new Verizon AOL Yahoo business is called, and you're just going to throw up in your mouth. We're talking about the FCC giving Charter a pass. This should not come as a surprise. And we're going to talk about the H-1B rules change and the hammer that has been dropped, plus, of course, all of the news of the day. I want to welcome you to episode 1190 of the Geek News Center podcast for Monday, April 3rd. The show is sponsored in part by GoDaddy.com and listeners just like you. Great deals from GoDaddy can be found at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. Or support the show today at geeknewscentral.com/insider. Or you can simply paypal.me/geeknews. I want to give a warm, warm welcome to all the new and longtime listeners of the show. Thanks for being here. Thanks for staying subscribed. Those of you that are longtime listeners, you're all part of the Ohana. Those of you who are brand new, well, don't feel bad. You're not being left out. You're going to become part of the family, part of the Ohana. All you got to do is listen to the show. And this show is a little different than normal podcasts. We spend a little time chit-chatting at the beginning, and then we get into the tech of the show. So I got a lot to share with you tonight. And for those of you that are brand new, we just need you to pop over to geeknewscentral.com, subscribe to the show right there in the right-hand column of the website. Either be on iOS or on Android, via email, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, or just use an old-fashioned podcatcher using an RSS feed. If you have no idea what I'm talking about, just click the more subscribe options on the website. You can also scroll down a little bit further. You find the link for the newsletter. The newsletter is basically something I send out immediately when the show is published. It contains everything I'm going to talk about during the show tonight, including all the links to all of the articles. So make sure you get signed up for the newsletter. And we want you to visit geeknewscentral.com daily to read all the great content that my team is putting out. If you have comments on today's show, geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter @geeknews. And really, we want you to take advantage and join our Slack channel. Our Slack channel is available just by sending an email to me and asking to become part of the Ohana that's basically available to chit-chat on the side. So definitely consider joining our Slack channel just by sending an email to the show. You can follow me on Google Plus, on Facebook. You can watch this show on the Roku, on the Apple TV, listen on Amazon Echo. You can listen on Stitcher, watch review on Blueberry.com, or you can even listen via the Google Home device. Our partner shows include No Better Than Average with Jacob and Jeff, The Gadget Professor with Mr. Don Bain, and the Pro Gear Site by the GNC team. This show is the longest running canoe sponsor of any podcast known to man, and that is, of course, taken care of by our good friends over at GoDaddy.com. We want you to consider picking up their products and services. It's a piece of cake. Again, once you get over the website, you're going to find all my deals, all my codes. Whether it be 30% off a new product purchase at GoDaddy, whether it be a 99cent.com, whether it be a dollar a month economy hosting or dollar a month managed WordPress hosting for the first year, which includes a free domain, all for just $12, or a month free trial of GoDaddy website builder. All those codes are available at geeknewscentral.com/GoDaddy. We want you to take advantage of that and take advantage of all the codes that are available for you to save money. And, of course, we want to definitely thank GoDaddy for their ongoing support of this show. They've been here for a long time. I haven't seen, of course, the results of last month, but I'm pretty confident that we've had a great month again. And really, it would not be possible without all of you supporting this show. And I tell you, it's my pleasure to bring it to you. And I want to thank again GoDaddy for their ongoing support here. Let's see here. Let me grab a couple of things as I'm a little bit unorganized tonight. Before we get into the content, I'm going to drop something on the the TriCaster and attempt to get it queued up before the we get into the too deep into the show. All right, I think I can find this. So, all right, there we go. I think I'm set. And then I'll be able to add that at the end of the show or somewhere throughout the show as well. So let's just chit-chat just a little bit here. I'm preparing for NAB. And, you know, it's what's really happening now is I'm having a lot of companies that are basically reaching out and saying, hey, come see us, come see us, come see us. And, you know, it's always, all right, is that it? Yeah. It's always good to be able to have a choice on who you get to go see at NAB. And I'm not under so much pressure like I am for CES. So, you know, I've been looking through the different vendors. They've been inviting me to evening events and so forth. And I'm going to pick four or five real good evening events and then just kind of, I guess for a better word, graze during the show and cover what I want to cover, stuff that I think is super cool. Plus, I go there to get educated myself and find out all the latest and greatest stuff. But I'll be bringing you stuff from NAB, of course. Post-show, we'll bring you some interviews. But it's not going to be like CES where I have this monster stack of stuff to put out. It'll be a dozen or less probably interviews, but that's just kind of the way it goes for when I cover NAB, and but I look forward to going that. And I again, that goes down. I fly out of here on the 21st of April, and then there'll be no shows the week of the 24th. So just be prepared for that. I'll be doing a bunch of stuff on Facebook Live and that kind of stuff. Working on a lot of proposals, getting them finalized, getting them back to advertisers. Of course, we did the new media show on Saturday with Rob Greenlee. And this coming Saturday, we'll be having Dan Franks from Podcast Moving On, talking to him. Personal taxes are in work by the CPA. Finally got the last little piece of information that she needed. This week is meeting week. Every day this week, I start right at essentially about 4:30 in the morning, my time doing meetings. And then I've also sent emails out to all the folks that indicated they were interested in the assistant position. And I narrowed it down to four. So I'm going to be talking with four different people. And hopefully by the time we're getting ready to do this show on Thursday, I'll be ready to announce who my pick is. I might have to go through a little bit of negotiation probably, but if everything goes right, should by Thursday this week have the assistant laid in like I said I was going to. So anyway, that's what's going on here. All right. I think that's all I've got in the initial stack here to talk about before we get into the tech content. And let me just make a quick peek over here on the desk to make sure I can get towards something near the end of the show. Hang on a second. Sorry about that. I had to make sure there was a connector available so I could switch from this to another adapter so that when I play Andrew's audio comments at the end of the show, I can actually hear them. Because if I don't, the way I have it run right now, this audio files I do for playback doesn't feed into this mix. So I just have to make a quick switch out, which will be odd at the end, but that's the way it is. All right, let's go ahead and get into the content. Let's get into the stack of stuff. And everyone that's, if anyone's on Facebook watching, thanks for being here. And Scott and Travis, hello. All right, so let's just talk a little bit about some Netflix announcement. Great news if you're the sort of person who wants to just kick back and watch movies on your laptop when you're flying. The Netflix app for Windows 10 now supports offline playback, meaning you can download shows and movies and save them when you don't have Wi-Fi. We know that Netflix added offline playback to its mobile iOS and Android app last year, which was pretty useful, but meant you were limited to watching on a phone or a tablet. So if you're into using your laptop and want to watch on a little different screen, you can do that. So anyway, that's pretty cool. You'll be able to watch Netflix offline and you'll be able to pick up a few movies. Now, the thing is, most airlines these days, like even on United, long as you connect to their system, long as you have a tablet and you connect to their Wi-Fi system, you get, you know, they have a pretty good selection of movies that you can run through. So this may be more of an option if you're going someplace where the bandwidth is not so good. So you can preload some movies so that when you're, you know, when you're watching them, they don't buffer so much. Now, you can't download just any movie or show. There are plenty to choose from, but some studios limit what you can download and store offline. All the Netflix originals and stuff like that are available. So load your laptop up whenever you don't have, again, decent internet service, and watch to your heart's content. So kind of a cool way to kind of prepare. And if you're going like camping or something and it's late at night and you want to, you know, give the kids a treat to watch a movie or something out in the woods, this is maybe the way to get that done. All right. I saw something interesting on the MIT Technology Review website at technologyreview.com. And it talks about the business impact of self-driving electric cars and how it's going to have strange effects on our society. Now, we know that electric car adoption is going to be relatively slow. Here in Hawaii, if you go by the number plates, by the total number of electric cars here, my wife's vehicle was like 6,600. Okay, so if you think about that, population here is about 1 million, and 6,600 people having bought electric car is really kind of an insignificant number. I think 5,000 of those are the Nissan Leaf, and then you got the Chevy Volt, and I keep seeing more Teslas on the street. I don't know how some of these folks can afford these vehicles, but you know, I'm glad someone can. But the if you think about way things are going to change, and this is going to take 10 to 20 years as adoption increases. I don't think gasoline vehicles are ever going to go completely away, but as batteries get better, as we try to, and of course there's ecological impacts to vehicles with batteries, just, you know, it has a pretty dirty footprint as well. So until they, you know, they can figure out how to improve the recycling of the batteries and everything that goes with it, there's going to be these second and third order effects of disruption that's going to play out, really, not just on our highways, but in our neighborhoods. So right now, me included, you know, I drive my son to school and I'm in gridlock. It is, I've gotten to the point now where I've kind of got numb to it, because I've learned to become productive when I'm, you know, in traffic. So essentially, for about the first 15 minutes of the drive to his school, I have, you know, freewheeling traffic. I'm at 55, 60 miles an hour. And then it just comes to a halt and we're 10 miles an hour for about 5 or 6 miles. And it's then that I usually start my morning calls with my team members at Raw Voice Blueberry. I do client calls before I leave the house. Then I do team member calls, which generally is anywhere between 6:30 and 7:30. And I get through them. So I've learned to make that morning drive hands-free, productive, because I'm not hardly moving. I'm creeping along. So my commute typically, and a good day, when the traffic isn't bad, like if, when school, when UH was out and the University of Hawaii was out, and when the kids were on summer break, I could get into town in 25 minutes, full speed all the way in, full speed all the way home. And but adding the university and all the kids like mine that go to a different school in town, public school, but, you know, they don't bus, the number of vehicles on the road increase you know, a lot, and the drive is much harder. So you think about the folks that live in Silicon Valley, they have to commute in for, I know people that have worked in Campbell or Silicon or in San Jose or in San Francisco. Some of those folks are commuting 2.5 hours each way just to find housing that is affordable, and much of their commute is creeping along and not at highway speeds. But once these cars, autonomous cars, get to the point of essentially being able to drive themselves, they're going to be able to drive faster because they're going to be smarter. The commute should be much quicker. It you know, this theoretically, if we get the highway off ramps, on ramps, all that set up, there's not going to be this caterpillar thing. The cars should, you know, the flow should be really good because the vehicle knows where, what lane it's going to get off in. It knows where it's got to go, picks the best, all the stuff that we do that we often pick wrong. And you've seen that guy that jumps in the right lane, jumps in the left lane. You know, he's changing lane 15 times in a half mile space, and he's driving you nuts ahead of you, and he's getting nowhere. The smart cars will not do that. So people will be able to potentially live a little further out, maybe live a little more inexpensive. And plus, when you get to your place of employment, you get out of your vehicle and the car goes parks itself. It doesn't have to park in that $100 a day or you know, $500 a month garage parking lot. The car can actually go off and you know, maybe drive 30 minutes to go park someplace where parking's less money, and then 30 minutes before you're getting ready to depart, the car comes back to you, you get in, takes you home. So how will that transform cities? You know, cities will probably always still have expensive parking, but maybe it won't be so hard for people coming in or being a tourist or whatever they may be doing. But it could change the whole economy of inner cities. It could all change completely. And you know, so much of our lives today, for many of us, are surround our vehicles. Many of you don't. Many of you can bus in, or you take the mass transit via a train or a light rail or whatever it may be. But the large majority of us don't. A large majority of us are in a vehicle, stuck in traffic. But also, stuff could get to the point where using mass transit will get smarter, because you'll be able to take your car to where the bus is loading up. You can get out of your car drives back to your house, and then you buzz in town at highway speeds that your vehicle allows. And if you need a car during the day to run around and do stuff, there's going to be all kinds of changes by us not having to worry about our vehicles once we get out of them at a destination. There's going to be new businesses popping up for car charging and all kinds of crazy stuff. So it's going to be real interesting in an America where the majority of the vehicles are automated, where we don't necessarily have gas stations so much. You know, there's going to be a conversion in those businesses. Car crashes may become much, much lower. In Europe, you know, we've got cities that predate cars, and they could really change the way things operate in cities in Europe. But in the United States, it's not the case. Most of, you know, all of our cities grew up in around public transportation. So interesting read by this guy, Jamie Condaliff, that to put this piece together here it was comments made by Benedict Evans, a partner at Silicon Valley venture capital firm Anderson Horowitz, that made these comments. But it really, you know, and I dream of the day I can, matter of fact, you don't even have to go with your kids to take them to school. You put them in the car. If they have to go and it's required that you drive them instead of them going on the bus, the car can take them without you. And the hours that we're all going to get back from sitting in traffic, I think it's can't happen soon enough. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, I'm 52, so 62, 72, let's say 20 years, probably before this really sees a mass net effect. But at 72, I might be at the position where, let's say something medically has happened to me and I can't drive. You know, the vehicle will at least give me freedom, an autonomous vehicle will give me freedom to be able to, you know, still be able to go places, go to doctor appointments, whatever, you know, whatever happens. And hopefully I'm, you know, maybe I'm still kicking in good shape. But for those of you that are in your 30s, or the few of you that listen to the show that are in your 20s, man, oh man, it is going to be really, really, really cool. I really think it has a potential to really change things in a big way, worldwide. Love to hear your thoughts. Love to hear your thoughts. Do you think self-driving and electric vehicles are going to change and have the effects that I'm thinking it's going to have, and this guy as well, on what could happen? He says, one last thing, he says, the only thing is that many repair shops will be out of a job because most car maintenance is focused around the motor, but things are going to change. People are still getting their car serviced. I don't think that's going to go away, but time will tell. You know, picking a name of a company is very, very important. When we were trying to determine the name of Raw Voice, we really worked at it for a while. It took us, you know, we had a long list of names. And at the time, when we picked the company name Raw Voice, we had this slogan that was basically fresh organic content. Hence, where the word blueberry came from, you know, it kind of led into that, right? Hindsight 2020, we probably would have named blueberry something else. You know, a blueberry without any E's, and which was stylish to do at that time. So, you know, naming a company has ramifications, and we probably suffered a little bit in our company growth by the initial name that we picked, because blueberry had no, you know, no like alignment with podcasting or new media. So, you know, I can laugh now because, you know, we're well established, but Verizon, Yahoo, and AOL is nearing its completion. AOL CEO Tim Armstrong took to social media on Monday to unveil the combination organization's new name. They're calling it Oath. Yes, like take the oath of office. OATH. They're calling it Oath. Yeah, I'm serious. And I promise I'm not April Fool's in you. That's already behind me. This is April 3rd. Oath? Really? I don't get it. To be honest with you. You know, I guess it's some sort of combination of their name or something. I'm a little bit like scratching my head a little bit here. yeah, who do you have for service? I have Oath. Who? Oath. It's just like this new podcast that Mike Deller and I are, we named it Your Podcast. Yes, Your Podcast. That's the name of the podcast, Your Podcast. And we kind of did it on purpose because we were pun on the word a little bit, but, you know, time will tell whether or not that was a right pick for a new podcast name. But Oath. I'm not conjuring up this, the vision of Verizon, AOL, and Yahoo in that term. I'm sure they're going to keep their respective brands, but the company is going to be called Oath. Is it now you just like open up the dictionary, you know, and you know, what did Google do? They picked alphabet. I can kind of understand that a little bit more than oath. I don't know who the consultant was that helped them with that, but I think they picked wrong. All right. We all, you know, how come when there's big mergers and there's agreements made about what companies are going to be required to do because they're being allowed to merge, but the FCC has reworked one of the key requirements it put on Charter. I'm going to sneeze here in a second. I feel it coming. The FCC has reworked one of the key requirements it put on Charter's 2016 merger with Time Warner Cable and Bright House, governing where the massive company expands in the coming years. Under the original requirement, Charter had to expand its service to 2 million additional households within 5 years. But half of those households had to already be served by another broadband internet provider, forcing the cable giant to compete. Competition's good, right? Competition's supposed to drive prices down. So now the commission has now voted to change that qualification. Charter will still have to reach 2 million more households within the next 5 years, but all 2 million will have to be households getting wired for the first time. Charter actually won't be allowed to count areas where it's competing. Now, while the change is bad for competition, and it isn't bad on the whole, so one of the FCC's chairman's Ajit Pai's core goals to expand broadband access to rural areas that still don't have it. And viewed in that light, changing the requirement makes a lot of sense. Instead of serving a million homes that already have broadband, Charter is going to end up wiring a million homes that had no high-speed options before. So, in one hand, I'm kind of like, I like to see competition. And on the other hand, I like to see expansion. So, if you look at where Charter and Time Warner's bulk of customers are now, you would definitely, and if you're on a fringe area and you don't have service from either of those providers now, if they're a mile away or something, and then maybe they haven't wired up your subdivision or you're down a street with not a lot of homes, this is an opportunity for those of you that don't have high-speed internet, or maybe you're stuck on DSL, which I know a lot of you are that listen to this show. Maybe it's time to pick up the phone and ring-a-ding-a-ling Charter/Time Warner and say, listen, I'm in an area that's not serviced. I want broadband. And get your neighbors together and I'll start harassing them because they've got to sign 2 million households that have not been wired up yet. So I don't know. I'm torn here. Do I want competition or do I want more broadband? I think, boy, I'm big on expansion. So I think I would have to say maybe this was actually a good call with the FCC. Now, the question really is, how are they going to measure this? Are they really going to be able to sign up 2 million people? Are they going to be able to expand 2 million? Are they going to go back and redo the requirements for AT&T and all those folks too? To see how far a little bit of competition can go, you just have to think about the rollout of Google Fiber. Even the threat of Fiber's expansion got AT&T and Comcast to start deploying gigabit internet. Companies tend to avoid competing with each other wherever possible. So, I don't know. We'll see. All right. I'll move on here. But This is an opportunity for someone in the footprint of Charter, Time Warner, and actually Bright House as well to get some high speed with it. Maybe close, but not quite far enough. All right, the president today cracked down on H-1B visas, and they're toughening the H-1B applications for overseas programmers. I know there's a lot of listeners to the show, a lot of IT guys that have gotten screwed on H-1B visa workers being brought in and job replacement. You know, H-1B is good in one aspect. Companies, small companies, they're having a hard time hiring folks, gives them an opportunity to hire workers at the same fair wage that you'd pay a regular employee, but maybe can't get it from the local community in which you are. So who's going to be affected most by this? So U.S. toughens the H-1B application for overseas programmers. And number two, tech and outsourcing companies depend on the visas for talent. And they are, those are going to be tightened down dramatically. And, you know, there's been a lot of abuse of this program by some of these outsourcing companies. But the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Service Agency on Friday made it harder for companies to bring overseas tech workers to the U.S. using an H-1B work visa. The agency issued a memo laying out new measures to combat what it's called fraud and abuse in the program. And what's interesting is the lottery started today. The Justice Department also warned employers applying for the visa not to discriminate against U.S. workers. We know that the president campaigned on a promise to overhaul the immigration system, calling for companies to hire more Americans instead of outsourcing jobs to countries with cheaper labor or bringing in lower paid foreign workers. Now, he can't do anything about companies going overseas, going to the Ukraine, going to India, going to the Philippines. He can't stop companies from hiring people in foreign countries. That isn't going to stop. But what they're trying to do is kind of basically having U.S. citizens that are in job areas that are capable of doing these jobs to be used. For example, entry-level programmers. Generally, entry-level programmers for most companies, you can take someone out of college, groom them for a little bit, and they can be a pretty good entry-level worker, just as good as an H-1B worker can be. It's when you get into the higher skill areas when you need someone at 8, 9, 10 years of programming experience that you may have a harder time filling, whereas it might be good to get an overseas worker, an H-1B, apply for an H-1B worker. So I got mixed feelings on this because there are definitely advantages for companies, small companies that are having a hard time hiring to get some help when they may not be able to get it locally. So we'll see what happens here. But currently, the Economic Policy Institute estimated there are about 460,000 people working on H-1B visas in 2013. But here's something that we all have to be aware of. We interviewed about 20 folks this year for intern positions. Now, interns today are making good money. And, you know, you have a first or second year student that is in college doing a summer internship. They could be $15 to $25 an hour. Depending on where they're at and their studies and how much they know to come in and work for a company for an internship. So it's not like you're getting someone cheap. That doesn't exist anymore. You're getting an employee, you're paying them a fair summer wage. And for developers, again, $15 to $25, something in that range is a pretty normal internship price, maybe as high as $30, depending on where the person is in their development cycle. So you can find, now if you think about that, we're hiring 3 interns. We interviewed 20 people to, or maybe 20 to 25 people to get three. So what we're finding is that the college system is failing a lot of our students. They're juniors and seniors, and they are interviewing, and they are not ready to join the workforce in the area of study that they've been working on. So this is part of the problem, is that people coming out of college today, at least on the dev side, maybe you've got 1 in 10, 2 in 10, that's actually ready to be able to go into a business and be a first-year programmer and be productive. So the education system is failing our students, not only in computer development, in computer programming, in computer engineering, into IT services. It's running the gamut on not preparing these young adults from entering the workforce and being successful. So my situation was, we were able to find three great interns, and I'm really excited to have them on throughout the summer, working to 2 to 3 months that they're going to be working with us. And maybe out of those three, and I'll be able to convert one of them to a full-time employee, maybe two, you know, be able to come to the end of the internship, be able to recognize how they've done, what kind of job they've done, and be able to offer them a job. And, but trying to find someone, and so, you know, we're kind of growing our own a little bit. But if you're trying to find someone that's got 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years worth of experience right now, it's really, 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 really hard, at least in the area that I'm looking at. So employers saw H-1B visas for more than 13,000 computer programmers in 2016, citing an average salary of about $72,000. Now, the way they split the H-1B up is a percentage of those folks are graduates, and then some of them have just with a bachelor's degree, or maybe almost gotten a bachelor's degree, and then a percentage of the H-1B visa workers are folks that hold master's degrees. They've got an additional 2 years so that they've got the job experience to come in at that higher level at the and have the experience to demand the additional pay. So again, it's the upper level stuff where we're running into trouble most of the time. Computer programmers made up about 12% of all H-1B applicants certified with Department of Labor in 2015. Of those, 41% were positions at the lowest level, 59% at the higher level. So this category, this lower level category, is a category that's probably going to be very hard to fill going forward. You're going to have to go into the schools and hire interns and hire people to mold them into these positions. But again, out of the 25 candidates that we talked to, there was 20 to 25 candidates. There was three. There was, you know, the other 17 were not viable. So interesting to see what's going to happen with H-1B. Now, those of you that have been replaced by a H-1B worker, that's wrong. And basically, the Justice Department is basically saying, hey, replacing U.S. workers may bring a lawsuit. So they could face legal peril from Attorney Jeff Sessions, and rightly so. To wholeheartedly go in and replace people's jobs, I think for a company just trying to say, if they're going to replace companies' jobs, then you lay off the people and then you go overseas. You don't bring people in to replace those folks. That's just not right. But another rule that may be changing here, the president has decided to actively reconsider an Obama-era rule allowing certain H-1B spouses to hold jobs. According to court documents filed Monday, It is asking the court to give it until September to consider the H-4 work authorization rule. This has become a high-stakes case with approximately 180,000 spouses of H-1B visa holders who gained the right to work in 2014. These are spouses of H-1B visa holders who are seeking a green card. So that's one thing that most of you probably don't know. If you have an H-1B worker and it costs about $10,000 for a company to go through the process to put a worker in for the lottery and get picked up and they get a two-year H-1B visa, you can then, the company then can sponsor that person for a green card. And if the person has a spouse, the spouse is along with them, they sponsor them to get them to be part of the permanent workforce here. So this is high stakes. So if those 180,000 spouses are not allowed to work, it may make some of those H-1B visa holders unwilling to come here and fill positions that maybe we do need in certain cases, getting that upper level folks. So we'll see where this goes with this, but that's under consideration as well. But this has huge ramifications. And I think the outsourcing companies, if a company's just doing nothing, bringing H-1B visa workers in for nothing more than to have them be available for companies to hire. I think companies, if you are going to apply for an H-1B visa worker and you make your case for it, you should have them working for you. You shouldn't be allowed to go and get an H-1B visa worker from a outsourcing company. That to me is, you know, that stinks in my opinion. But anyway, this is a big change here, folks. Big change on H-1B. Love to hear your comments on this. I've spent a lot of time on it, but I've been following this pretty close. I'm going to be long tonight. I got a lot to talk about yet. Okay. Over in the Daily Galaxy, alien life and intelligence exists beyond our solar system in forms we can't conceive, an interview with Britain's top astronomer says. And he says that basically, because the biosphere here on Earth has evolved over the past 4 billion years, and that the scientists still to this day, they think scientifically, they understand the origin of life, but they really don't understand how it made the leap, right? Okay, that's the scientific definition here. So they're saying because the universe is so old that, you know, there's probably not a lot of chance there's a lot of people on our same plane of development. And if you think about how short of a time we've actually had intelligence and being able to, you know, go into space and communicate beyond Earth, it's really been a very, very short time. So they feel that over the next couple of decades, life on Earth could change completely. And that idea of the matrix of plugging in and uploading, that could come, and we could make contact someday and actually be machines by that point. So it's kind of an interesting write-up. And he thinks that the first contact we have will be with some intelligence that is machine-based instead of organic. So I'll have the link up in the show notes for you there to take a peek. Also, there's a good article about the Atlas V rocket and the Boeing Starliner ULA progress, how they're doing. So I'll have that up in the show notes for you to check out. Also, there's in photos, a record-breaking NASA astronaut Peggy Wilson for the ladies out there that want to grab some stills and share it with maybe a young woman in your house, or if you're a teacher and you want to share her story. This is a great, great story for women to share with, and guys to share with your girls and to take this into the education space. And we need a lot of women in the science and technologies. Two of my programmers at Raw Voice are women, and they do a great job. Neil deGrasse Tyson said, I'll fly to Mars with SpaceX after Elon Musk sends his mom and brings her back. There's a really actually pretty good article on space.com. It's an interview with him. And it, I won't go into the full details here, but he talks about things he's concerned about SpaceX, things he's excited about them, talking about, you know, the realities of going to Mars. And I'll have that, of course, up for you in the show notes. Also, some of you that are using Facebook are seeing a rocket icon in your app. So here's what that is. The icon position right next to the main news feed icon gives you a different type of news feed, one which displays popular posts from people and pages that you haven't befriended or liked. So if you've seen this, let me know how that feed looks like. But apparently, it gives you an alternate universe view. I guess that would be the best description of it. So I don't know how they're matching it up with your likes and dislikes, but that is a new button that's again going to be available in the app. And again, it looks like a rocket ship, and it gives you a news feed of people that are not friends and you don't follow but have popular Facebook posts. I wonder if they're trying to promote additional cross-posting. I wonder if that's the case here. How many of you are doing any home brewing? Yes, beer home brewing. There's a new home brewing robot that's gotten a little cheaper with what's called the Pico Brew Pico C. And I think I remember talking about this Kickstarter last year. Let's see if I can bring up the screen and show you guys this thing. So it's a little less expensive. They're getting ready to do a Kickstarter here. What's going to be the price? The Model C debuts on Kickstarter for $279 US, and it will retail for $549. Now, if you want to go full out and you want to get the one that they announced from last year, the Pico Brew that is for more serious brewers, the prosumer model for that is $2,000. So pretty expensive. So if you're looking for a little more inexpensive brew kit by a company that has done a pretty good job, again, kicking off on Kickstarter for $279. So here in Hawaii, the challenge with brewing beer is temperature control. And that's the big challenge here. And you have to be able to do temperature control. I know a lot of folks use like mini refrigerators, and to be able to set the temperature so their mash can be at the right heat, even in areas where it's not so hot. But you almost have to have a dedicated mini fridge to be able to regulate the heat. A lot of folks go in and modify them so that they maintain the right temperature. I have had saw some posts on Facebook earlier today talking about solar. Of course, I've talked about solar on my show here. And my 3-year, 6-month payback for my system for my 36 panels. But if you're thinking about solar panels, you really need to know how much sun your roof gets. And there's a new website that does that for you. And it's based in zones. So I think there's what happens is when they look at your house, when a solar provider looks at your house, he'll tell you whether you're zone 1 or zone 6. My house is situated in zone 6. It's perfectly aligned to get the most amount of sunlight. You can't get any better. So what this will do is it'll show you where your prime generating side of your house is, and how much area is available for solar panels, and what you would save over the years. So again, it's at Project Sunroof. And it gives a building-by-building detail. It has data for parts of all of 50 states. So you may want to check this out. Maybe a way for you to save money on electricity bill. My electricity bill is $18.25. And it has been for a while now. And it's lovely. It was probably one of the best home investments I've ever made. Apple's placed orders for 70 million OLED displays. So that's good news. The upcoming iPhone 8 would be the first phone with an OLED display. I've always said OLED displays look more brilliant than life. So the screen should just be dazzling. Tesla now has a higher market cap than Ford. Who'd have thought of that? Tesla stock rose today $298 and passed Ford in value, which is, if you really think about it, pretty insane. Makes me wish I would have bought Tesla stock. I probably would have dumped it. But what's going on really is, even though Tesla's market cap is higher than Ford at this point, which is still to me is remarkable, Detroit is kicking Silicon Valley's doo-doo in the race to build self-driving cars. And but there's been some assessment out there that upstarts on the sunny West Coast, Uber, Google, and Tesla still have a lot of catching up to do when it comes to outpacing their rivals in good old Michigan. And I call, always, because I'm from Michigan, I always call Michigan God's country. That's an assessment of a research firm which scored 18 companies working on self-driving technologies, 10 different criteria related to strategy, marketing, execution. The report then combined them into an overall score to get a sense of who's ahead and who's not. GM and Ford are currently leading the pack, with Daimler and Renault, Nissan close behind. Those four companies make up the Navigant's leader category. In other words, when you climb into the self-driving car in 2020, most certainly will be built by one of those four companies. And then, believe it or not, contenders include Hyundai, ZF, Toyota, Waymo, BMW, VW Group, Volvo, Delphi, PSA, and Tesla. Tesla's kind of in the bottom corner of the contender list. Challengers would be Honda, Baidu, Uber, and Autonomy. So, interesting study. So we will see what happens. I wouldn't rule Uber out anytime soon. When I was young, I read, there was this hacker magazine. It was something to do with 2400 baud or 300 baud or, oh my God. I am losing my hacker cred here. This was back in the early days of, and I wasn't really early, you know, I was, I started doing a bulletin board. I believe, what year was that? 84 to 87. Been around the 88, 89 time frame. I run a Wildcat BBS. I've told that many, many times. But I think my first modem was a 1200 bottom modem. But there was a magazine called 2400, I think, that basically, and there were some hacker books out in the early day that talked about Captain Crunch. This guy in the late 60s. He found a way to get free phone calls on AT&T using a very sophisticated hacking tool. He got a whistle that came from a box of Cap'n Crunch cereal and happened to enjoy the very same tonal frequency as AT&T used to reset its phone lines. And he was able to basically get free phone calls. And this gentleman by the name of John Draper became known as Captain Crunch. And he was a hero to many, including Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak. However, today, Draper is seriously ill. He and his friends have launched a GoFundMe page to help finance a 9-hour surgery, which he went under with on March 28th. I read the stories of this guy in the early days and these hacker books and hacker magazines and stuff that was out there. Matter of fact, the hacker magazines were kind of hid in the bookstore. You often had, it was like a porn mag. You actually had to ask the staff where the 2400 magazine was, because they didn't ever put it out front. You had to go get it. They had it hid somewhere. It was ridiculous. But, so, I'm off astray here. But this gentleman's trying to raise $15,000. I'm so inspired by stuff like this guy did that I'm encouraging each of you to go and make a donation. I haven't yet. I will be personally making a personal donation to this guy. And it's just these historic hackers, you know, kind of appeal to, I was never a hacker, you know, never at all. You know, I dabbled in playing around and trying to learn stuff, but I never had skills with a Z. you know, my closest thing came to hacking was hacking a bulletin board and making it work. And that really wasn't even hacking. So, And I did hack some scripts and stuff up to get around, but nothing like some folks really did in the early days. So sad to see he's having some medical issues. But if you know John Draper and Captain Crunch, his nickname, definitely go throw $5, $15 on it on the GoFundMe. They're trying to raise again $19,000, I believe, $15,000. All right, I'll move on to the next one here. And he kind of looks like a mad scientist today. Let me, for those of you that are watching, let me bring up the image here. And he's not got 100% chance of recovery. He's got about a 50-50. He's got a degenerative spinal condition. So anyway, very cool. So Crunch Medical Aid, they've raised $36.90 at this time and trying to get to 15K. The GoFundMe's been ongoing for about 13 days or so here. We're going to be long today, folks. I can see it already. I might get through. There isn't really... Okay, for those of you that live outside the United States, if you're using a Samsung Android replacement operating system called Tizen, you really got to reconsider using that phone. There are security holes. There's like 40. One guy from Israel did a study on the Tizen operating system that's in a lot of Samsung TVs and smartwatches and mobile phones on the market, even some Galaxy stuff slated for release. If you go about device and you have a Tizen version, I'm just telling you, this thing is wide open. It is, and it's mostly for folks overseas. You don't have a lot of Tizen in the United States. It's bad. I mean, it's really bad. So I have a link up to it in the show notes. Definitely check that out. Also, Google's got a bit of an ad problem. They said they've got a tiny, 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 very, very, very small number of ads that are running on content that shouldn't be. And they've had it for a long, long time. That doesn't bode a lot of confidence, but yet a lot of companies have pulled out of campaigns on Google, especially on YouTube, because they're getting shown on videos that are racist and offensive type of videos. Are having some challenges, so it's become a little bit of an issue for the folks at Google and YouTube. If you're looking for an apartment, you may want to check out RentBerry. This is an app that's been operating in some test cities, but they've just expanded to 1,000 cities. If you are the renter, you may want to look at this as well. If you're a rentee, maybe a way for you to save some money, or you can bid on an apartment maybe that you're trying to get that's in a kind of an area you want to be in, but it goes slow. So if you're willing to pay a little bit higher than others, so definitely check that out. I have that link up in the show notes for you. Also, electric skull cap. This is horrible. There is a cancer out there. It's for folks that have this cancer called glioblastoma, and I'm sure I'm saying this wrong. Glioblastoma. And this electric skull cap, which costs upwards of $700 a day to be used in the treatment of this rare form of brain cancer, is proven so far to helping patients live longer. Usually when folks are diagnosed with this type of cancer, they are, it's not good. The survival rate is very, very bad, beyond 1 or 2 years. And they've got people that are actually having as much as 5 years of survivability with this, but it's $700 a day. They say that most insurances will pick it up, but the oncology company Novocure, which funded the clinical trial, say it will pay for the treatment if need be. We've never refused a patient regardless of insurance status. So, I guess this is a very rare disease, but at least there's a very interesting, and what it does, it It attacks tumors with a low intensity electric field, and it's for brain cancer. So exciting, but wild at the same point, and they've proven it in clinical trials. NASA's planning a daring repair mission to save a $2 billion particle detector on the International Space Station. And it's going to cost about $100 million to fix it. Basically, some cooling pumps. The detector is creating great science right now. The scientists are just, they want to run the detector all the way out until the International Space Station is shut down. And they basically are getting enough quality science out that NASA's funding the repair. So they've been working on that. So that's exciting. We could see that within the next year, that mission going down. For those of you that do not have credit cards or debit cards, Amazon Cash makes it easier to shop on Amazon without a debit or credit card. They launched it today. And through your mobile phone, you are able to charge at Amazon Cash sites. You can basically turn the cash over to the Amazon Cash site. They input the amount of money, and it's basically, it pre-charges an Amazon account. So Amazon Cash will be available at a variety of major retailers, including CVS, Speedway, Sheets, Come and Go, D&W Fresh Market, Family Fair Supermarkets, and VG's Grocery, with more retailers to be on the way. Customers can deposit between $15 and $500, and they explain how it works. So if you don't have a credit card or a debit card, this is a potential way to be able to shop on Amazon. Great article on Wired talking about the Russians, how they're still using a similar backdoor over two decades later. And it goes really into that hacker spirit of some things that happened in the early 90s that they're learning about now. They're actually looking at the log files of some sophisticated hacks that happened in the 90s. And it's a great read. So it's kind of like a hacker time capsule. Good write-up by Wired. Link will be in the show notes, of course. At the same time, there's been serious attacks from China targeting UK firms. So there's been a massive increase. And they've seen firms in the UK, Europe, and Japan being targeted by the group. The National Cybersecurity Center and two security firms have warned known victims that they've been compromised. A lot of spear phishing, emails that are booby-trapped. Custom-made malware sent to key staff and IT services firms. The hacking group maintained a massive network of sites, domains online to serve the various attack vectors. So, and I'm sure this continues in the U.S. as well. At the same time, hackers have figured out a new way to empty ATMs. They just drill a single hole, and about $15 of computing gear caused the ATM machine to go dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun and just empty itself. And it's some older modeled ATM machines, which are falling victim to this. And they just basically used a drill a hole, and then stick through and attach to, it's a simple hack. Someone's figured it out, and they don't have to open the front. The alarm doesn't go off or nothing. It took the team 5 weeks to decode what they were doing. But this is going on all over Europe, where a drill and $15 worth of electronics caused the old ATM machine just to spit out a pile of cash. Thousands and thousands of dollars. Pretty scary stuff. A little bit of revisit of a tech topic. It has been proven that the FBI paid Geek Squad informants to search computers for child porn in a court filing. Multiple technicians with Best Buy's Geek Squad repaired service received hundreds of dollars from the FBI in exchange for seeking child porn on customers' computers, according to court documents. So, anyway, that have that story up. You know, someone's stupid enough to leave that disgusting material on their computer, they deserve to get caught and arrested. But it's just an interesting move here, and a real test here of the Fourth Amendment. Nikon, if you're a Nikon user, they're celebrating their 100th anniversary with limited edition cameras and a Swarovski figurine. So they're introducing special lenses and a bunch of stuff that commemorating the 100th anniversary. So I have the link up show notes on that for you that are diehard Nikon users. Apple's decided to make its own GPU to control its own destiny. For years, a company called Imagination Technologies gave Apple a tech behind iPhone Retina-ready graphics and eye-popping imaging processing. That relationship ended today. From here on out, according to an Imagination Technology release, Apple designed its own underlying technology for GPUs. The reason simple, it's officially too important to trust to someone else. And that stock cratered. About the half company's annual revenue come from Apple. So we'll see. We'll see where this goes with Apple and their GPU, and maybe it's leading into machine learning. After Volta killed privacy rules, users are trying to pollute their web history. People are building apps now to just randomly load websites to try to give your internet service provider all kinds of bogus information. I will say, though, that some ISPs have come out and said, we're not selling data. There's been a few. I'll try to get that list together for you, but if you're concerned about this change, some people say it's not that big of a deal of a change. That's the proponents. The opponents of it are saying, yes, it is a big deal. There's some answer in between. It's time for a VPN if you're really, really concerned to be able to privatize your stuff. And the president did sign that. So he did sign the repeal of the online privacy rules that has been pushed through. Also, what does Congress care about? Well, there's some history coming out. Buying Congress's browsing history would feel like the perfect payback for its recent votes to betray your internet privacy. Too bad it'll never happen, but at least you can still get a glimpse of what your representatives are looking at online. Today, the folks at Government Track, an online service for monitoring bills before Congress, launched a page listing every visit from congressional offices or the White House to their site. The list won't tell you which members of Congress or staffers visit each page, but it could shine some light on what bills and issues really matter to Congress. They say it's interesting to see what they think is important and whether it's what the public thinks is important, Government Track founder Joshua Tabor says. It's interesting to see how they spend their time. So, kind of interesting. They're not giving out all the data, but they are showing a little bit. All right, last couple of articles here. In their war with the Wall Street Journal, top YouTubers have really been, basically going to war and questioning what some companies' motives are. And there's been a lot of anger bubbling around YouTube. They have to be very, very careful here. And they're on Google's platform. YouTube is its own dealio. So anyway, that's where that leads. All right, the final article for tonight is about an Android espionage app. It's called Pegasus for Android. Comes 8 minutes after a similar iOS app was found. Researchers have uncovered one of the most advanced espionage apps ever written for Android mobile operating system. They found the app after it infected a few dozen handsets. Pegasus for Android is the companion app to Pegasus for IO. Stay away from this. This is very, very nasty. All right, so let me make a quick switch here. Hang on.
Hi, Todd. It's Andrew here from the UK. Todd, in your last podcast, you talked about the seizure-inducing GIF that some scumbag sent to a politician via Twitter. Unfortunately, he's been arrested and no doubt will face charges. I learned the hard way that these flashing images can be a real problem for epileptics. Back in the early days of the internet, I ran an introductory evening course for adults wanting to get online. I mean, it's so far back, it used MS-DOS 6 and Windows 3.1. But part of the course was to download and unzip and install programs that you'd find on those public domain and shareware sites that were so popular back then. In this particular instance, I found a wee game that didn't take long to download and was easily installed, and the reward for successfully doing the exercise was a couple of minutes of game time. Regrettably and inevitably, the game I'd chosen had flashing elements in it, which induced an epileptic fit in one of my students. Now, fortunately, first aiders were on hand and the fit didn't last long, but neither myself nor the epileptic knew that computers could do this. I mean, this is how, I feel like, early it was in the whole internet and computer explosion. So it was a learning lesson for both of us that I guess neither of us will forget. Anyway, Todd, look, thanks very much as usual for the great work, and speak to you again soon. Thanks, Todd. Bye.
All right, Andrew, thanks for that. Now, here's what happened here. for those of you that are watching. When I plug into the audio stream that gets fed by the TriCaster, when I speak, the audio is delayed, and you have no idea how bad that messes up your head when you're getting feedback. So those of you that are watching, you probably saw me quickly unplug my earbuds because it caused me to like talk really weird. So that's what I get for not running the audio through the system the way I used to. But we get so few audio comments that come into the show now. I just don't have that normally set up. Now, if you guys start sending me more audio comments, I'll hook it up the way it used to be. And, and I'll be able to feed stuff to you guys a lot easier and not with me jerking around trying to get stuff hooked up and changing headset and then having a problem speaking after the, when we run that. But, Andrew, thanks for the comment. You know, and I was aware, that there could be some images that are, cause people to have seizures. And I think we've heard about some of this before, but it's just downright mean for anyone to have actually targeted someone with epilepsy with one of these images. And it's, you know, largely the reason why this guy got arrested. So anyway, thanks for the feedback, and I apologize for it taking so long, you know, two shows in a row to not get your comments on. Hey, if you guys want to submit stuff to the show, feel free to do it at geeknews@gmail.com. And if you want to send an audio comment like Andrew did, please consider that and do that. I'll take it in WAV or MP3. Either way is fine. The audio was a little low, so I had to crank things up a little bit. So you guys heard a little bit of background noise there. Apologize about that. But other than that, everyone, thanks for being here. I'm going to wrap the show up now. We're actually not too bad on time, only about 2 minutes long. And if those folks have been on Facebook with me live tonight, thanks. I know we've had some folks on YouTube as well. And I'll go over there and look. It looks like the stream has held pretty good. It's been pretty active. You always remember, you can come over and chit-chat at facebook.com/Cochran on future shows. And we get started around 8 p.m. Hawaiian Standard Time, which is 11 p.m. Pacific Standard Time or 2 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And of course, if you're over in Europe or Australia, you'll be awake and able to join the show recorded every Monday and Thursday night in Hawaii. So everyone, thanks for being here. I hope you enjoyed my analysis of the H-1B hammer and how it has fallen. And we'll see what happens in outgoing years with these changes and whether or not IT companies are going to have trouble. And maybe, if nothing else, those of you that are listening to the show, if you have a kid that's doing computer science, you can take to heart some of the stuff I've said and kick them in the butt and make sure they're ready and do a little self-study to go into the workforce when they're getting ready to do internship work. But anyway, that's it. Thanks forever for being here. We'll see you next time on the Geekness Central podcast. We'll be back on Thursday. Everyone take care. Aloha.